remember back when John Kerry was running for president and Fox News was constantly showing him testifying post-Vietnam, talking about Vietnam and how, I think, and I'm taking out of context his exact words, but John Kerry said something about, with regard to the war effort, they don't know it yet, but they've created a monster. And I think the same would apply to the media today with regard to Donald Trump, which is a big part of the piece by our guest Anita Findley, Media Complicity in Donald Trump, Demagogue in Chief. Anita Findley is an author, an actress, a blogger, Epoch Times contributor. Her book, Dirty Words on Clean Skin, spent 4 months in the number one position in Amazon's Women in Politics list. Anita, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Good to be back with you. How are you?
Ah, it's been an interesting week. I was just explaining to people the business of death, because it was a week ago today exactly that I was sitting in a funeral home talking about the final arrangements for my mom, who died today, a week ago.
Oh, and, sweetheart, my deepest condolences. I didn't know. I'm so sorry.
You know, thank you. She was 88.
Wow.
She had a great run. The way I look at it is she's back with the man of her dreams, dancing the Lindy, drinking a highball, and probably smoking a cigarette. So,
hey, you know what? That's exactly the way to think about it. That is exactly right. My mother, you know, blessings, is she's still with us at 89 and a half, but she still talks about how she used to kick up her heels in Roseland and make
right?
me feel bad that I moved her out here from New York. She hasn't been to Roseland in 40 years, but she still rubs my nose in it. So somewhere, someday she'll be dancing again, too. So that's how we have to look at it.
I think my mom was at Roseland about a week before she died, in her mind, and she was in the early stages of dementia. And it's interesting how they go back to the things that were so important to them and that so resonated with them. And she said, I was talking to her one day, and she goes, oh, yeah, Joan and I, last night we went to Lundy's. And Lundy's is a seafood restaurant down in Sheepshead Bay. It was a great place. I don't think it's been open in 35 years. But she was there last night, and she told me how she loves the flounder. And, you know, it was like she was sitting. I could hear the glasses. I could hear the murmur in the room in the mm-hmm. way she was talking about being at Lundy's the night before. And I just go, oh, I love Lundy's. And the one thing I learned about dealing with the early stages of dementia, and some of the people that she was with where she was being cared for, is just go with it. Don't fight it. Don't say no. No, Mom, that's been closed for 35 years.
No,
because that just makes them
yourself.
Worse.
Exactly. But, you know, yeah. Think about it, Jerry. Just even what you were saying about, you know, even my mother going back and reflecting about something that she used to enjoy. Think about, you know, when we talk about the political debate you were just mentioning and all of the misery that it brings upon us. You know, when you look at what's most important to you in life, isn't it your relationships or those special moments that you shared
Absolutely.
With the people you loved? I mean, that matters more. You know, what our difficulty is trying to stay involved and not lose sight of what's important to us while we still hold the other people in check.
I told Patrice, and working aboard for us on the show here, I said when I got back, I said, you know, I had a better week watching my mom die than I did watching cable news.
And oh, ouch.
He was like, what? But it's true, to your point.
Yeah.
It's like, what's really important? What really matters? What do we focus on? And, you know, now getting back into the news cycle and looking at all the craziness and the insanity and the chaos and the perspiration, I'm like, you know what? There was a certain importance, obvious, but peacefulness in sitting in ICU for 4 straight days watching my mom pass.
But you know what? At least you're with someone you love, and you know she gets the energy. She gets your energy that you're there, and she gets all the vibrations and all the messages that you're trying to give her, whether she can consciously hear you or not. You're communicating that, you know,
yeah.
as opposed to the crap that we get communicated to us by people who are doing nothing but fear-mongering on a daily basis.
And for what reason? Ratings, right?
Yeah, bingo. Which is what I wrote about.
I know, exactly. And I've gotten so much hate emails and I'll never listen to your blank blank show again. And who are you to demagogue Donald Trump? And who are you to throw us under the bus and blah, blah, blah. And I go, look, I'm right. He's a clown. He's
mm-hmm.
wrong for America.
Mm-hmm.
And he will prove me right over time, not only with the things he's already said and done, but the things he will say and will do. And I will be vindicated. And it's not about me being right, but the media has taken this guy and they have made him into this creation, and they're just running with it because it's jacking the dials. We're talking about a presidential election now for 6 months that was 16 months away. We're still a year away. We're not talking about the things that matter now. We're not talking about the things that need to be done yesterday. We're not talking about the issues that affect people on a day-to-day basis. We're talking about somebody who's supposedly some political messiah for some group of people who think that Mr. Trump Smith is going to go to Washington and solve all the ills of society.
Well, look, Trump is only about Donald Trump. First of all, I had no idea you and I agreed on this. Yes, I think he's a nonsense candidate that is really only about self-aggrandizement in the most cynical fashion. For those who fashion or imagine him to be some sort of a messiah, he's saying the most outrageous thing that he can because it's going to get him into the headlines. But rather than just debate that, I wanted to mention something to you that a friend wrote to me today that I thought was interesting. He said, you know, he agreed with my, thesis that, you know, media had pumped him up and that he was only about himself and really had no intention of being a serious presidential candidate and really pinches himself in the privacy of his penthouse. He can't believe that he keeps getting away with all of the stuff that he says. But he believes, my friend believes, that part of his support comes from people who are tired of political correctness and enjoy the outrageousness of his statements because it's sort of like a knee-jerk reaction that they want a way to express themselves. So I think that that's something that, you know, we do have to acknowledge and that I acknowledge it. And I think that I'm not fond of political correctness either. But I think, you know, as you have often said, Jerry, the left 10% and the right 10% tend to get the loudest. But it's the rest of us in the middle that really that's where sanity lies. So without being crippled or being told by the thought police, you're not allowed to have a fear. Yeah, I get that there's a fear of the other, the foreign, the outside. But I think that that also has to be coupled with reason and with facts. And the problem is that he does not couple anything that he says with fact. He makes up a bunch of statements that he doesn't have backing for, and the media has been complicit in being very lazy and slow or completely lacking in calling him out on the demagoguery and the lies so that people are, oh yeah, they're going to come and kill us and they're going to do, you know, I mean, Steve Jobs' father was a Syrian immigrant. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, you know, you can't just group everybody in one, one bad place and say these people should be penned up and locked up and we can't let them in here. That makes no sense.
I look at the media and, you know, covering what's happening in Chicago now, the police shooting, waiting a year to release the video, protesters taken to the street demanding the resignation of Rahm Emanuel. They want a riot in Chicago. I saw the same thing in Baltimore. I saw the same thing in Ferguson. They want a riot.
And you're,
I know, some
the media
people,
does?
The media, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
not,
yeah.
Not the, the media wants a riot. The media wants black versus white. The media wants rich versus poor. The media wants left versus right. Because those are easy things to sell, and they can talk about them ad nauseum. And then it's the only thing you talk about. It's the only thing you hear about. And then the next Ferguson or the next Chicago or the next Baltimore pops up. And then it's like, well, we got to go because now we've got a new riot or we've got a new race war or we've got a new something or other that's going to be a part of the news cycle for 3 or 4 days. And you write in your piece, Donald Trump is a cautionary tale for a cynical corporate owned media that cares less about informing the public than they do about clickbait. Amen. True to form.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, when Shauna Vercher and I, who do Dare We Say for Epic Times, when we were doing a video segment a few weeks ago talking about something in University of Missouri, I believe it was, where the president had to step down and there was, you know, racial confrontations and racial insensitivity and so on. Well, that's what the media wants to cover. But that doesn't mean that anything is going to be solved going forward. And the students,
right,
having gotten attention for what is a very important and serious problem, they can't let up because now the media is like, oh, we got that soundbite. Okay, let's pick up our cameras, pick up our skirts, and go home and go on to the next thing that we can stir people up about. So, you know, that's why I think these conversations are important because it's, look, I've always said it's not so important. I know that I lean more to the left than to the right. So people are not necessarily going to agree with me on this station, but I hope that they'll listen enough to say, I don't care whether I agree with you or not. What you say makes sense in that I shouldn't just accept hook, line, and sinker what any media outlet tells me or what any candidate tells me. I have to look at the statistics, either backing up or denying what they say, and say to myself, hey, wait a second, maybe I don't want to run out and riot. Maybe I don't want to run out with a gun in the air. Maybe I don't agree with this. And if I don't, why is somebody trying to make me hate? Why is somebody trying to make me angry? Why? Because it keeps you consuming and clicking and not thinking.
Right. And you look at the shopping of confirmation bias that a lot of people do have, is that they will only seek out those sources that validate what it is they think they believe. So they're shopping confirmation bias. And I tell people, I said, look, I watch it all. You know, I watch Fox, I watch MSNBC, I watch CNN, I watch Bill Maher, I watch, you know, this, I read Huffington Post, I read left, right, center, everything in between, I read domestic and I read international, because there's...
Really, you put yourself through all that pain so others don't have to.
Exactly, and then we throw it all up on EpicTimes.com. We do the heavy lifting for you.
That's right.
You know, but you can take the same story, but depending upon where you go to get that story, it's a different story than what the real story is, because some people will leave things out because it's not convenient to their argument. Others will include things that they think would be generic to it, but it's not, because it helps to foster their case. And it's almost as if no matter what it is these days, everything has predetermined for whatever the story is going to be. In the old days of debating, you were told what the subject was, and you learned everything you had to know about the subject that you were going to debate. The only thing you didn't know is which side of the debate you were on. And then after you did all of your research, you got all of your information, and you were ready to put together your debate strategy, then they said you are for this or against this. You are pro this or you are con that. And you have to take a look at it in its totality. Now, you decide which side of the debate you want, and then you shop the information to help to support your position.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. That's exactly true. But I think something else is really important here in terms of how the media has pushed Donald Trump to the fore. And I don't say that he hasn't tapped into a vein of frustration out at a certain part of the public, obviously, or the certain part of the Republican public anyway. So I get that, and I honor it, and I understand it. But at the same time, you know, the media has been very cynical in not calling out what is damaging or what is untrue about what they say. And the fact that he said, well, now we have to stop all Muslim immigration to the United States, and we need to clamp down on this, and, you know, all of his other offensive statements, Mexicans are rapists. When you look at the facts, people probably don't know this, but first-generation immigrants from Mexico are less likely to commit crime than more. Most people probably don't know that. But the fact of the matter is, he says things that nobody is bothering to research, and they cynically just put him up there because they're outrageous headlines. And this is doing damage to our country. Some of the things he said about Muslims, for example, is this is a recruiting poster for ISIS. This is not what we're trying to accomplish here. You want people who are peace-abiding and law-abiding citizens to be on our side, not to have an excuse to be pushed away from us. So this kind of rhetoric does not lend itself to strong leadership. So whether he has an opportunity to be the nominee or not, what he's saying is still dangerous and is still something that needs to be called out on the carpet.
And one thing you write about, by the way, Anita Findlay with us on the program, talking about her piece, Media Complicity in Donald Trump, Demagogue in Chief, EpicTimes.com, is at what point does this monster that the media has created start to turn on the Frankenstein called Donald Trump? Because I know as you wrote in here that Arianna Huffington defends the Huffington Post, saying that they looked at Trump initially as entertainment, but now they're going to change the tone of their coverage after they gave him the oxygen and he's now leading in the polls. So is there a media mea culpa that's coming where we help to create this persona? We help to get this guy to where he is?
No, they will never, in answer to your question, no. There is no mea culpa coming. They may change their coverage, which they're already doing. Now they're calling him out on the carpet because they're getting afraid of how much noise he's making and how much traction he's getting. But you will never get a mea culpa from them, just as you didn't about their sycophantic coverage and the one-sided coverage toward President Obama in 2008. You will not get that from them. They can't admit that they just have been pushing a narrative. But yes, they are turning on him because now it's starting to worry them because they can't believe that they keep calling him out on the carpet to say that, well, he's just a joke, and the joke isn't going away. I think that he will sooner blow up his own candidacy than they will be able to blow him up, because I can't see that this guy turns his back on his own empire, quote-unquote, to have the discipline to be a leader in this country. I don't ever see that happening.
Yeah, I just, and like you, I understand why people are behind him. I understand the anger. I understand the resentment. I understand the frustration. I understand how people are feeling that they've been left behind by the political status quo, that they're being consumed by the beast that is Washington, D.C.
Yeah, as long as they understand that he's not going to help them. As long as they get
right.
that no matter how much frustration he may capture that they feel in the moment with his demagogic statements, he is the last person that has their back and is ever going to do anything for them. And this is beyond politics, Jerry. I'm not even telling
you,
or who to vote for. He ain't the guy. That's for
I
sure.
I know. But I would have to think that when I listen to the politicians of today talk about Donald Trump and about how bad he is, but if he's crushing them in the polls, what does that say about the people who are saying Trump is the wrong guy? It's more of a reflection on them than it is on him. And we'll see where this all goes. Anita, it's good to talk with you again. And tell your mom at 89 and a half years old that she'll be dancing again back at Roseland.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jerry. Always good to be with you.